This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to the show Help on Arrow FM. It is a pleasure to be here today and chatting to you. So my name is Michael. The Help is a show that my wife Abby and I host every week. She is unavailable today, unfortunately. But so what it is we talk about, I guess, some parenting aspects, things we've learnt, things we would have liked to know before we probably got into the point of having kids, and even going through the whole journey of when you are pregnant and you're getting all this advice and different things, and just some topics that we, you know, would have been maybe need to focus on more. And then it's just research we've done on the aspect of parenting, going through different stages. So for us, we have three wonderful kids. They are, we have one that has just started intermediate, the other two that are at primary school still, in year fours and five. So pretty much we are at the point where we've kind of gone through the baby stage, gone through the toddler stage, gone through the early children. We're now kind of in this in-between stage there before they get to tweens. Lucy, my daughter, is a tween, I guess is what you call them now, and before they get into teenage years. So that's the space we're in. We have lots of great topics that we can talk about. And we also do this show as a part of the organization my wife and a couple other people founded about 5 years ago now. 2019 is when it all kind of kicked off. It's called the Ruth Project, and that is aimed, it's a charity that's aimed at helping families going through perinatal mental health distress. It's probably the best way of saying it, perinatal mental distress. And it is kind of wanting to really surround these families with support, help them to build a support network and be there for the in-between appointments, I guess pointing them in different directions of trying different aspects. They use the Te Whare Tapawha approach, building the four walls of your whare. Now, apologies if I'm getting this slightly wrong, because I do, normally this is my wife's wheelhouse to talk about this stuff, and I will do my best to make sure I am doing that well. So that is the Ruth Project. It is fantastic. It's not a professional organisation. It is fully funded by different, different trusts, whatever. Where funding opportunities exist, we do apply. Just because we want to keep it a free service, we're not trying to be healthcare providers. They're trying to be that support network and peer-to-peer support. So that is the Ruth Project in a nutshell, really. So if you want to know more about it, head along to the Facebook page. There is also a blog page. Yes, fantastic. So that was a little plug for them. Back to this radio show, which is Help. Now, last week we spoke about postnatal depletion, which was a fantastic topic, and there is some great resources around it. It affects parents physically and mentally as well, and it's quite easy to identify, especially if you look at some of the resources. It's not just mothers or the person who gave birth to the child that feels this, it is partner as well, whether it's husband, wife, whatever relationship you're in. So, cool topic, and there's a really cool book around that we talked about last week. So if you want to listen to that show, head along to Arrow FM website. Under the programs, you'll be able to find Help, and you'll see all the shows that we have done, or I don't actually know how far back it goes. So anyway, it's on there. Have a listen. This week is going to be fantastic. Is Identity Chef. That is not what it is about, although that will be a fun topic or fun game. Like, chef cooks you some food and you've got to try guess the identity of the chef that cooked the food. Maybe fun for some people. I'll just enjoy eating the food. to be honest. Identity shift in parenthood. Who am I now? So why does this matter? So many parents feel like they've lost themselves after having kids. So today I'm going to explore going to explore why that happens, how it impacts mental well-being, and how we can reclaim our sense of self. It's quite a cool topic because there is so much stuff that can change year to year that you kind of do get to those points in your life where you actually need to reassess who you are now. Like, all of a sudden you're not that fun, like, you know. I mean, for me lately, especially as I'm getting back into fitness for football, I'm like, oh, this year is a little bit harder than it was last year to get myself back into being fit. So yeah, it's called age. That's where I'm now, getting old. Right, so want to be very clear and upfront. We do not claim to be medical professionals. We are not trying to give you a diagnosis or anything like that. We come from a point of view of discussing based on research, experience, and some expert insights. So we do our due diligence as much as possible. But we are not medical professionals, and we're not trying to be. Ideally, these sorts of topics that we talk about will get you thinking, might get you questioning, or even just raise awareness about something. And we encourage you to go and find out more yourself. There are plenty of organizations, plenty of places you can use to find that as well. So don't take what we're saying as 100% medically correct. It's probably the best way of putting it. Right. So what is identity shift in parenthood? Identity shift happens when a major life event, i.e. becoming a parent, changes how you see yourself and your place in the world. For many parents, it's a challenge because they struggle with no longer recognizing themselves. They feel a loss of independence, spontaneity, or personal goals, which I think is very relevant because, and like, it's good to actually, we were talking about this, that we identify as a major life shift, because I think if you, it's not just becoming a parent that this is going to happen in. So yes, the focus on today is going to be on parenting because that's what the show is about. But I think it's also good to recognize, you know, there could be other things that cause a major emotional shift. It could be moving to another place. Like, you lived and been in one area, so say you live in Masterton. I'm not saying yeah, move to Carlton, because no, I'm saying like move to Invercargill, move to Auckland, move to move country. So that's a big shift, and so then you can go through. That's a big life event. It could be change of job, death of a loved one. It could be a winning the lotto. There you go. That's a positive one. So I'm going to keep the focus on parents, but it is very important that this will kind of extend to just more than just the parent side of it. There's other things going on there, and I think one of the things why I'm limiting as parents is because the symptoms or the challenges that you're feeling when you become a parent will be quite similar across the board, whereas some of the others may not be. So the key ones, you know, the loss of independence, spontaneity, because you have a dependent, it's like all of a sudden you can't just, you got to figure this out. You got to decide what are you going to do with that dependent before you can then do that. So you can become a lot more planned. So some research, Dr. Alexandra Sachs, a reproductive psychiatrist, describes this transition as matrescence, so matrescence, the process of becoming a mother. It's a life-changing, and it's as life-changing as adolescence. So let me just rephrase it, because I got stuck on that one word. So Adrian Stax says, describes this transition of the process of becoming a mother as a life change, as life changing as adolescence. So that's, you know, going through the puberty stage. That's all the neurons and your chemicals just flooding your brain with sort of stuff. So quite identifying, yes, as a becoming a mother, there is going to be a lot of emotional changes that happen and go on. go further to that. Dads and non-birthing parents experience the shift as well. Research shows fathers' brain activity changes after having a child, increasing emotional attunement. So, which is quite fascinating because I would agree with that quite a bit. And you think about where we come from as a race. So I'm not going to dive too deep into this topic because there is a lot of different thoughts around, you know, did we evolve? Were we monkeys? All that sort of stuff. Or were we separate from the animals and then just progressed and the human race has just progressed? But whatever your core belief is around this, what you can identify is the whole fact of, I guess, what they call selective breeding, or in terms of when you're looking at nature and its adaption. So you can see that they're animals, when you put them into a different environment over a long period of time as they as they have children and next children, next generation, the animal will adapt to the circumstances around it. Cats, house cats, fantastic example. Like, they used to be wild, and dogs actually. You go back far enough, and there wasn't such this docile dog or cat just walking around. They would have been killed straight away. So there is that sequencing that takes place to ensure the survival of that species, and that's just basically nature. That's how it works. There is a sequencing that happens in the brains for animals to adapt to their surroundings, to the environment, to ensure that the survival of those species. Now, I'm not going to go into human intervention with that because we kind of screw a whole lot of animals up, but it makes sense that in human anatomy, our brains will rewire themselves to ensure that we have success for the future, especially around kids. And this is a natural part of the human being where it makes sense that the father will have those kind of chemicals flood their brain, and the mother as well. I think why I'm being specific about the fathers, because quite often it's seen as, you know, the mother, because they have that connection, I should say non-birthing parent, because the person who births the child has that connection, that mother has a connection physically inside. You can see there's a physical change in the body. You know there's stuff going on. It's very clear that there's a change there. But it's important to remember that the non-birthing parent, that there is chemical changes that happen when the birth of this child comes. And it is quite a lot. It's quite interesting that they have put it down to emotional attunement. And that's the whole aspect of ensuring that you are going to look after this vulnerable creature. So, I mean, it's pretty quick and easy as to why, and maybe I'll just linger on this point a bit, but, you know, why there's an identity shift in parenthood. Why? Because there's a baby. And what's going on? There are some chemicals that are going to flood in the brain of both the birthing parent, the mother, and the non-birthing parent. And so whenever that happens, stuff starts to happen. And it's interesting that I've likened it to adolescence, where it was very clear with adolescence there is stuff going on with a teenager. They cannot control themselves. So then I guess it's a question of, why do parents feel like they've lost themselves? What sort of things have they lost? And this is where it's going to be a little bit more aimed at parenthood, because of the fact that there's quite a few common denominators. So there is the loss of personal time and hobbies. And I think that's a big shift there, because your time is all of a sudden taken up by this dependent or what free time, I suppose you say, because if you've got, you know, the routine, you've got to work, that's quite a big important part of people's lives. Got to sleep, which again is quite important, but you know, as parents, it happens when it happens. So the things that you would do to fill yourself up, you know, there's a strain on that. So it could be sport, it could be tinkering with cars, it could be playing games, it could be making stuff, crafts, candles, pottery, all that sort of stuff. Things that you just quite enjoy, all of a sudden, almost overnight, effectively, there's a shift in it. And so the things that you were doing now has to take a backseat, or you don't get to spend as much time on them. So not only that, there is change in relationships. So there's friendships that will shift as in priorities. Like you might have regularly gone out with friends at least once a week. So then can you actually factor that in realistically? Like, it's not just a fact about time. It's also, do you have the energy to do that? Because especially in the early stages of having a baby, because that's what we're really focused on is where they feel lost. And maybe you don't feel lost straight away, or you have to re-identify your who you are. Maybe it will happen in like 5-7 years down the track, but I think you can still take away the point that because you have these dependents, these kids, you can't just as freely go out with your friends whenever you want. And so there's that shift, because and it's not because you don't necessarily want to. It's not because of the lack of want. It's about priorities there. Like, you're going to, you've got to balance these out. Equally, romantic relationships can take a backseat. And so many times we've encountered couples that are together and parenting together where the romantic side of it is strained. And that could be with people that are committed to each other, not let alone if you are a solo parent, trying to have a romantic relationship after a baby has come, or even the baby's early years and stuff. It's not easy. So because it comes down to the whole priority, the timing of those aspects as well. Not only about with relationships and friendships, careers, and there'll be career and financial changes. So how often do we talk about the fact that in today's economy, it's more often that both parents are working to some capacity? So once you have this dependent, I mean, that there's a shift there. How are you going to deal with that? You can't just be like, oh yeah, we'll just carry on as normal, because it's either like, is one parent going to be working? Is both parents going to be working? If both parents are working, is one at home working? Or are you putting the child into some care? Because if you're going to put the child into care, then there's financial costs to that as well, which means then you're having to put financial load. You're also feeding the child more, clothing them. You've got to have all the stuff. So there's a financial cost to these children, which then can put a bit of, can create conflict. And then also just the whole who's working and how long are they working. All those aspects, there's changes that happen in there. And it can get to the point where potentially you may not necessarily be able to pursue certain aspects. Maybe you wanted to do extra training to further your career, but that's going to involve you doing stuff in your time, and you might not have to prioritize it, so then you can't go do the training, which then might lead up to you not getting a promotion or anything like that. So there's all this stuff there that's kind of as a cascading effect of having a child. There's also there's societal expectations, it is quite common, especially at a young age with the babies, where society will expect parents to put their kids before themselves. That, you know, you got to make sure the kid is looked after in every need, and it could be, well, more often than not, it'll be at the expense of the parents. You need to provide this for your child, so then you forego having that for yourself. I'm just going to make it easy, say, I don't know. I could go into it quite deeply, or not so deeply, I should say. But it's just taking that on board that all of a sudden you need to actually put the needs of your child first, and society's going to expect that. And so then that creates tension and pressure for yourself of how you're going to respond to that and be criticized if you don't. There's also cultural perspectives, te ao Māori. I was going to go into some of that. So traditional Māori parenting, whānau and hapū support parents so they don't lose themselves in isolation, which is quite good. There's a whakapapa genealogy, which is a genealogy concept. It reminds parents that their role in caregiving is a part of a large interconnected story, not a loss of identity, but an expansion on it. So there is this. So not all of this can be is negative. There are definitely ways and attributes where you can guard against it. I think some cultures are definitely set up a lot better. Some families are set up a lot better for this than others, because it depends on how much of a thread or how much of a support network, all these different aspects. And when, I guess why I say cultures is because when a culture has been doing it for hundreds of years, thousands of years, and it's the whole thing I went back to about adaption, you know, and humanity, and you know, they've adapted their whole way of life to cater for this event because of how sacred it is. I'll be pretty blunt with a lot of the Western culture that's grown up in England, the keep calm and carry on type attitude, which, you know, there's a time and place for that, but in my experience, that sort of way created more isolation than it did community. So it's potentially, you know, humanity adapted in a different way. A lot more focused on consumerism and money and status than some of the other traditional, or some of the other cultures, I should say, have adapted, where there's a lot more focus on community and family and hapū. So that's just going through why, quite often, why parents feel like they've lost themselves. Just with a little bit of also, you know, some things that has been proven to work really well, and that is fundamentally the community aspect of it. Because when you have a community around you, when you are in those times where you know you want to do something that brings you joy, like who are you going to pull on? Who are you with? Who are you going to surround you with? Who's going to take the load off the family? Maybe you have grandparents, maybe you have someone who can come in and have your child for a period of time so you can go off and do things. For me, I've pretty spoken about this quite freely in the past, where football is something that I've held on to for through all my kids, through growing up. As one thing I've always done for myself, and it's quite important. So, but then with that, you know, it is a balancing act, because I can't make every training, can't make every game. It's just life happens. There are times when, it's just, for example, like last year, the time where half the family was sick and thrown up. It's like, yeah, I can go play football myself, but you know, how is that going to be with the family? It just happens. But still, community is important there. So how does this affect mental well-being? I mean, if you follow the show, you're going to know where I'm going to get into some of the key points, because in reality, the key things that we talk about where people start to decline in mental health are very common. They're very common threads, and it's all because things are just left unmanaged, left not looked at, and left to just kind of go on their own crazy ways. So definitely when you have lost yourself, or when you don't have that community where you are questioning, you have an increased risk of postnatal depression and anxiety. A study of in Maternity and Child Health Journal 2001 found that parents who feel the loss of identity are at higher risk of postnatal depression. watch, I mean, you kind of just think, well, that makes sense, you know? They've got the chemicals flying through the brain. They don't, all the stuff that used to ground them before is not really happening. So then anxiety builds up or depression builds up, and then it just basically ends up in the cycle where you're not doing okay. So I think it's just be well aware of that. There is also emotional exhaustion and burnout. And this is stuff of like the first 2 weeks we talked about this, the previous 2 weeks, I should say. Parental burnout was what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And that is just the whole fact that it's like burnout. Well, it is burnout, but the only difference is you have dependence, so you cannot actually get away or rest as easily or get what you need as easily. So it takes a little bit more effort and a little bit more focus and a little bit of support to actually get you out of there. And the exhaustion, so constantly meeting the child's needs without space for personal growth, can lead to that burnout, can lead to exhaustion. Even this week for me. So I've had sickness in the family. Wife is down with being sick, hence why she's not here. But like, so today I had picked up the kids. I took them back to work with me just for an hour or so, a couple of hours, and I get home, cook dinner. And it's just like, the kids just wanted me this and this and this and this and this. It's like, well, I'm trying to give to them. I just had to say to them, and then, hey, stop. Like, you guys are wanting, you guys all have your own demands you're putting on me. Now, you guys need to solve those demands yourself, because I can't do it for you, because I already have this I'm doing and this I'm doing and this I'm doing. I can't be there to solve all your demands. You guys have to figure that out. And so even right now, I can fully understand that constant demands of the children. Luckily, it was a stage we're at, as my kids are old enough and capable enough to get themselves sorted. So they just kind of need a bit of a reminder that I'm not going to do it for them. And, well, today's case was that. But especially when the child is a lot younger, you cannot rely on them to do it yourself. You can't get like a baby, say, you're crying, feed yourself. I'm just going to go and give myself some space, because that baby can't feed itself, obviously. Going back into this, a sense of isolation, parents who can feel disconnected from old friends who don't have kids or partners who don't understand their struggles. And I think that is really fantastic, because we experienced it. We were the first ones of our group, I guess, or similar age. So we had kids pretty early. I was still about 20, well, how old was I? 24, maybe, if I remember correctly. And so we were some of the first ones in our friend groups to have children, and we did definitely notice that as soon as we had a baby, we stayed pretty mobile. And we're like, now we'll go out. We'll set ourselves up to go out. And I mean, to be honest, we'd probably put unrealistic expectations on ourselves. But we just stopped getting invited everywhere. We no longer got invited to barbecues or nights or different things, because it's the whole thing of, they've got a baby, they can't come. So, and so our friends' dynamic, our friend group just shifted quite dramatically. And something we didn't really think about before we had children is, okay, well, we're not having, none of us around us is pregnant, so it's just going to be a bit different. So if you can fully understand, and the biggest thing is understanding, like having friends that understand your struggles. How, as a parent, I'm sure you'll testify when I say you can't explain what being a parent is like to someone who doesn't have kids or doesn't have that has no experience with kids, because they just don't get it. And there's just some stuff that you just cannot say or teach. They just have to have a child to get it. Because the amount of times when people with no kids give you advice, I've given this guy a bit of crap about this over time. And he has had kids now and has fully understand his folly in saying this. But I was with another parent at work at one time. We're talking about feeding our kids and, you know, how trying to get the spoon to the mouth. And I think our oldest was like 2 at the stage. And she just wasn't. She's the sort of toddler that was not tidy when it came to eating. And also there's just certain foods you're just trying to get them to eat, and you know there's always that struggle trying to get them to eat this food and they don't like it. And so I'm relating to that to another parent. We're just chatting about it in different ways and stuff like that. And then this person popped in and was like, have you just tried to ask them nicely to eat it? And I think all the parents in the room that heard that just cracked up laughing, because they're like, yeah, okay, no. And became a bit of a joke for a while, until that person finally had children and then realized what they had said, and like, yeah, that was just dumb advice. Don't. So that whole thing of people aren't going to understand your struggles, 100% get that. And I think it's also where it's important with this, especially when you are feeling that sense of isolation, that what I would suggest is you look around you, have another look at your, I'm going to say, friend group, have a look at your spheres that you exist in, with work, any clubs, any organizations, family, and identify who, maybe there's some people there that actually have had children, or either similar age or a bit older, and just saddle up next to them. Not just anyone, see if there is they have a very similar, or a parenting style or a family that you quite like how they operate. Because going back into some of the other things we talked about, there are so many different ways you can parent and create your family group and the culture or the atmosphere, whatever you want to call it. There's so many different ways you can do all that. And so I would suggest you look around at who might have a very similar thinking of how they want to raise their family and have their family, and actually just settle up next to them and just see and learn and have experience, because that will then help break some of the isolation as well. Also, the whole thing about friends. You can hang out with them together, because you know what? You're probably going to be going to the playground more often than you are going to go at night. And this is where, you know, what I said about it before, the Te Whare Tapawha framework that exists is really good. It's what the Ruth Project uses, because, and it's not just us. If you actually start to look around some of the different organizations that are out there, even the schools, this has been taught in the schools now, because it is such a great framework, because it's identifying where your four walls are. And it's not about having all of them 100%. It's about having them all in balance, because the whole thing is the roof of the whare needs to go on, and it can only go on when all four walls are actually balanced and up and stable. And so you've got the tahi hingaro, which is your mental well-being, your tahi whānau, taha whānau, which is your family well-being. Now, I apologise. My wife will probably be squirming at my pronunciation for this. Taha wairoa is your spiritual well-being. Taha tiana, which is your physical well-being. So having a look at where you rate yourself, where is your, maybe you struggle with this, maybe you need to link up with someone, go through this, like, where is your mental well-being at, in terms of how have things impacted you in a way where your mental health is in a good place, bad place, what needs to be done to get yourself into a better place there. There is, like, if it's really bad, there is professional help out there that can help you. If it's manageable but you still want to decline, okay, there are organizations out there that can help you, or there are people around you that might be able to help you. Factoring in yourself is going to be important to try and get yourself to a better place. Where's your family? Finding strength through family connections, whānau connections. So where is that at? Can you have that? Do you not have that? Can you address some of that? Can you speak openly and honestly with some of your family members? And if you can't, are there people in your world that are friends that you will kind of see a little bit more like family, that will actually be the support network for you at the time? Like, I think it's important to recognize just because they're blood family doesn't mean they are the family that's going to support you. And I think it's really important to recognize that, because you can't surround yourself by people that are going to pull you down. You will end up coming down yourself. You have to be around people that are going to pull you up, and in turn you pull them up as well. Really good visual example of that is the as if you ever see some of the conference courses, obstacle courses, armies use them, train drills, where to get up a wall, and it takes three people. They have a technique where two people are lifting one, then one person's lifting the next one, the one at the top is pulling them up, and then the last one's jumping, and it's two people at the top pulling them up. It's the whole fact that actually it takes teamwork, and as you surround yourself by people that are going to lift you up or pull you up, you in turn will turn and pull them up as well. So having those people in your life is really important. Your spiritual well-being, rediscovering your purpose and self-worth. So that's going to come through this journey as you start to identify who you are. Spiritual, there's a lot of different avenues with this, and I think that's something where there is understanding your self-worth is probably the key part there, and how you fit into that spiritual realm. And the physical movement, rest, self-care, maybe you love going to the gym, and that's part of you going and doing that. Keeping your physical self in a good place is always going to benefit. And that's where the whole thing, when all four of those are actually in unison and working together, you'll actually be fairly strong. Now, they may not be 100%, they may all be like 60%, but as long as they're balanced and moving upwards, you will be resilient. Right, so how can parents, probably touched quite a bit on this as we're going to go through, but how can parents reclaim their identity? So this is like going back to really evaluating some of the things that has caused you to lose your identity, and then reassessing them. So like reconnecting with past passions. So even if it looks different, is there a way you can bring it back? Is there a limited capacity you can have it in? Is it that you say like, hey, to your partner, hey, I need one afternoon, one evening, one day a week, just so I can do this, because this is what's going to be good for me. So how can it look? Now, it will look different. And maybe when your kids are older, you can incorporate them into it, so it becomes different again. But understanding that your past passions are there more than just because you enjoyed it. Like, they actually gave you a sense of worth. They give you a sense of purpose, and there's quite a bit going on with them. And so it's looking at it from a different level of, yeah, I'm just going to go play my car, like play my engine because it's fun. Like, actually, it's kind of encouraging you, and it's helping build you up. And actually, you can look at studies there, but there'll be chemicals that will be starting to fire off as you get through, as you're doing it. And that's all that stuff is really good and healthy. So talking about a little bit with that, with reconnecting the past passion, it's also that creating that space for yourself. And that space could be with the past passion. It could be for different other things, just to get a break sometimes. Now, quite often the recommendation is like even 10 to 15 minutes a day can and will make a difference to how you're going. Whether you factor in each day or to be honest, you need some time each day, even if it's just the end of the day, just somewhere to actually not have anything else going on apart from just being able to de-stress, to recoup, to be okay. But with that also, with creating space, I think it's very important to be intentional with it. So when you're planning the week, actually plan in time to not have anything on, to have that space of, I need to look after myself. This is my 4 hours, or this is my hour blocks where there is either I intentionally plan to not plan, so that in those times I can be spontaneous. I could just go out and have a drink, or I could see a friend. Like, whatever it is, I think it's just ensuring that you have that regular space and you're being intentional planning it or not. Big one I have talked on quite a bit is leaning on your community. And what is that community? Family, whānau, could be friends. It could be what I talked about with the fact that your family doesn't necessarily have to be blood related to you. Māori proverb, do I even try to attempt this? He aha te manui o te ao, he tangatai. What is the most important thing in the world? It's people. Really hope I did not butcher that too much there, but it is so important that connection helps parents feel less seen and supported. And that, like, regardless of whether you claim to be an introvert, which, you know, introverts exist, I am definitely one, I still need connection with people, because it breaks that isolation I feel, breaks those mental games of you're the only one feeling this, you need to just push through, all that sort of stuff going on, it breaks it. So having connection is so important. And a lot of this will also challenge some of the social, societal expectations where it's okay to ask for help and it's okay to prioritize your well-being. And I think what's nice, and I still wonder how much of the organizations I'm part of kind of a little bit of a makes me see this a lot more, but I do think that mental well-being and looking after yourself is an ever-growing trend in society where it is becoming a norm. It is becoming things we're well aware of to make sure people are doing that because of how much it actually impacts performance, how much it impacts well-being, how much it impacts different areas, that actually making sure people are looking after themselves and asking for help has become a lot more normal, which I think is a great thing. Look, I'm not going to lie, there are also some people with this that will struggle with this identity thing, and it will be a much more severe case than others. And that's where you need to recognize that actually you need more than just community help or friends. You do actually need to seek some professional help. And if you're in that camp, there are plenty of services available. It's kind of get in touch with, if you can, like a mentor, counselor, so you can go down the route, psychiatrist, can go to GPs and start to work through, because of how much of the shift in identity, shift in who you are, that loss of it, can actually then start to have these triggering effects that end up in a worst case scenario if left unchecked. So if you find that actually you need to talk with someone at a more professional level, seek help with that. Talk to some friends or talk to your partner about how you or who you, or where you can go and how you can get support for that. I know there are organizations in the community. I probably cannot rattle them all off because I'm not as much up to play as my wife. But check out the Roof Project's Facebook page, and I'm sure there'll be links into this as well. As to some of the organizations you can look at. So, key, as I'm kind of wrapping this up, key thing is when becoming a parent, you know, that big life-changing event that happens doesn't mean you lose who you are. Doesn't mean you lose your identity. It means it's evolving. It will adapt. It will change. And you might find that actually your identity will then encompass being that parent, having that kid as well. And so it's just going to change, and ideally want to see you adapt with it as well. Because fundamentally you are still you. Being a parent is an addition. It's not a replacement. So just take that away as And it's more just about understanding how you can be you and be a parent and mash the two together. I remember this analogy once, and I'll share it because somebody I got told this analogy when we were going to get married. Because they said, oh, you know, when this person were going to get married, this person had this analogy about these two, what marriage is like is when you have these two basically asteroids or two things that come together and they merge together and it all just comes to be beautiful. He's like, that was complete rubbish. When they hit each other, things just went flying everywhere. And it was chaos, which it is the two objects are stuck together very hard, but it's so similar to being a parent where all of a sudden this happens and it is just like an explosion and all the stuff goes everywhere and then you just start to bring it all back in and your identity, what you were before that, is forever changed and you adapt with it. I hope you have enjoyed today. I hope you had some thinking on some of this topic. If anything, if you do need to seek help, if you do have questions, there are many ways you can reach out. Via Facebook is probably the best way because that will go to my wife, not me, so then she can answer. But in all honesty, if you did want to ask me, just go through there and I'm sure I can answer some questions. But just know it's important to have that community around you, and through this whole time, you are you and you'll forever be you. Next week, we will be talking about breaking the cycle, how our own childhood impacts on our parenting. So I'll be very keen to have that conversation because there's definitely some aspects there I fully agree with, and I'm already starting to think about a few things. But that's all I have tonight, or today I should say. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy whatever's left of the summer. And we will tune in next time for that fantastic topic. See ya.